Hello, and welcome to the PR Weekly, the podcast that gives you your weekly fix of PR industry news, analysis, and gossip. I'm John Harrington, editor of PR Week UK. My colleague Arvin Hickman is unable to join us today, but I'm delighted to say we have two special guests with us. Last week it was announced that Publicis had acquired Taylor Herring, the multi-award winning PR agency renowned for its creative comms campaigns. I am delighted to welcome Taylor Herring founder James Herring and Publicis UK influence practice lead Chris McCafferty, who will give us the lowdown on the deal. Welcome, Chris and James. How are you both?
Very good, thanks, John. Thanks for having us on.
Likewise, John. Really good. Thank you again.
Very welcome. Very welcome. Brilliant. Well, it's obviously been a busy week, I'm sure. A busy couple of weeks. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Before we get on to discussing the deal, we're going to talk about some other issues in the world of PR this week. PR Week revealed its 30 Under 30 and newcomers list on Wednesday, which is always a joy to do. And it's great that MSL and Taylor Herring both had people on the list, so congratulations to them. I wanted to ask, as agency bosses, Chris and James, how do you find this new generation of younger people at your agencies are different than how the younger people were, say, 5 years ago in terms of skills, background, priorities, things like that?
I always think 30 under 30 is a really important moment in the year. It's a moment I always look forward to. I never won it, which I deeply regret. I'm definitely not under 30 anymore. But as you mentioned in your intro, we have an MSL person in that 30 under 30 this year, Kim Allen. And I think Kim kind of epitomizes in many ways what this generation of people are all about, right? They're super driven. They're really connected into the culture and businesses and so on that surround them. They have a real lack of barriers, just in the way that younger people do in wider society and wider culture. They're really kind of pushing boundaries and they have huge expectations of themselves. And equally, they've got huge expectations of us as an agency and an employer. They kind of hold us up to super high standards, which I think is a really good thing. So it only helps us push on.
From our side, John, yeah, I mean, I agree with Chris. The 30 under 30 is a real list to watch. I mean, these guys all have the potential to become the industry leaders of the future. It's a list I'm sure many agency bosses have got eyes on. It's a prestigious group to be part of. You know, there's that nomination process and scrutiny from a judging panel. I think this year, perhaps more than most, it's been a really tough year for everybody on that list. So the class of 2020 have really had their work cut out for them in what's been a, you know, incredibly turbulent year. The under 30s are the engine rooms of most agencies. They are, you know, complete account ninjas, managing everything from client handling, media relations, running a team. And definitely, I think that the new breed come with a far broader skill set than they did back in the day. They're creatives, they're content producers, they've got good strategy heads, they're being pulled into new business stuff. So really rounded range of skills across all of them. So yeah, I'm delighted to see Rosie Cope, one of our own, making the Hall of Fame.
Fantastic. And yeah, I mean, some of the achievements and skills of the 30 is astonishing. I find I'm always blown away, and certainly this year. So no, it's really good news. Congratulations again to them. Other things this week, we had another one of the big holding companies, WPP's results. The PR division grew 2% organically in Q1. And the return to growth kind of chimes with a lot of anecdotal things we've heard from other agencies about growth. In general terms, how have you found trading so far in 2021 in your businesses and in the market generally?
It's been a really busy start to the year. I don't think we've ever seen a new business pipeline quite like it. I think that lots of clients are coming out of hibernation after 12 months of uncertainty and want to hit and get those trading results firing on all cylinders as fast as possible. It feels to us like our normal gold rush in terms of project launches tends to happen in the run to Christmas from September, but it seems to be happening a lot earlier this year. There's almost a pre-Christmas Christmas, which is basically this summer as restaurants and pubs and retail all unlocks. And so from our side, certainly the phone is ringing a lot.
Yeah, and similar on our side, really, John. I mean, our recovery out of the pandemic commercially probably started in the summer of last year. and we just continue to see momentum building.
Brilliant.
Across the board, really. So it's particularly strong rebound in the consumer brand space, but we're seeing a lot of spend in all of the different flavours of work that we represent. As you know, I look after Salter Baxter within the influence practice in the group as well, our sustainability consultancy, and that business has never been busier. It's great to see all of those businesses kind of investing in sustainability and taking their responsibilities in that space really, really seriously. So yeah, it's great, and it's wonderful to have momentum. Without a doubt, it's still a competitive marketplace, so there's a lot of spend in the market, there's a lot of opportunity in the market, but equally that some of that growth is really hard won, and I think that's only a good thing, right? Because it keeps the standards of the agencies incredibly high, and we know we have to be at the top of our game, unfortunately, and we all are at the moment, so the growth is coming.
Really good to hear. Moving on to the acquisition, of course, starting with James. How long have you been considering selling the business, and how did the bid from Publicis first come about?
So, I mean, in the back of our minds, I think we've always thought that maybe one day we might sell to the right partner, but we've never, as such, ever put ourselves on the market. So the approach from Publicis last year was really welcome, but also unexpected. In terms of how it came about, Chris called me initially. I think I was mowing the lawn at the time. That's probably a bit of unnecessary detail for you there, John, but if you want to get granular, I'm happy to provide those extra details.
Go granular, let's do it.
So this was actually last May. I was looking back in my WhatsApp chat. It was on the 1st of May last year, and I remember him saying to me, while our competitors are thinking about how they're going to survive the next 12 months, we've been thinking about how we might grow the group and improve our offering 12 months down the line when we come out the other side of COVID. He said that he was looking to bring in even more creative capability. He was very nice about our work. And so that led on to the next round of conversations, and Kath and I met Annette King, who's the group CEO, and we talked more about how we might be able to bring some more earned media firepower into their ad agency set, but also how they plan to grow Publicis's influence division under Chris, of course. But the thing that got us the most excited and what they were really on the phone for was to tell us that they wanted to scale Taylor Herring from a boutique creative shop that we are, and turbocharge our growth. So while we've achieved some pretty decent growth under our own steam, we've never really in 20 years ever had a business plan as such, and have just really sort of followed our nose trying to do entertaining, fun, impactful work and trying to find the kind of clients that want to do the same sort of entertaining work that we enjoy doing. So hearing Chris and Annette's plan to scale up the business and actually put some rigor behind it and actually have a plan was genuinely exciting.
Brilliant. Were there any other serious potential suitors for Taylor Herring?
Well, like I said, we've never been on the market, but I mean, I would say that over the last 10 years, we've probably had two or three approaches, but nothing that's ever felt like a really good fit. And that's obviously key if you're going to set yourself up for success.
Yeah, absolutely. And interested to hear about timings. Why did you decide to sell now? I mean, did the pandemic and lockdown play any role, or was it a case of responding to the opportunity from Publicis?
Okay, well, I'll do the lockdown question first. So I think lockdown did play a role, but not because we were having a hard time financially. Actually, we've been incredibly fortunate that we've won some decent pitches and even achieved some growth last year. But I think one of the positive things about lockdown in a weird way is that it sort of disrupted the flow of things for us a bit. So the normal agency hamster wheel where you're running at 150 miles an hour to service current clients and pitching for new ones, actually lockdown gave Kath and I more time to think about our agency, our company, and what the plan was. We've been going for like 19 years and literally haven't had time to catch our breath or pause for thought. So in terms of why we've decided to sell now, well, I suppose we're genuinely really excited about the plan that Publicis put on the table. We met all the bosses of all the other agencies in the group. They were very enthusiastic. We could see immediately where the synergies were on their side and where the opportunities lay. And ultimately, there was a very decent commercial offer on the table as well. So it all kind of made sense.
do you think, you know, as you say, you've been operating the business for 19 years. Do you believe that there is a ceiling on an independent agency's ability to grow and scale without joining a larger group?
I don't think that's the case. I think there's lots of great commercially minded indies out there punching above their weight. Hope and Glory and Warren Johnson's W spring to mind. They've all scaled by pulling focus on decent press office retainers or diversification or acquisition. But ultimately, it's a question of what gets you out of bed in the morning as an agency owner. I mean, we've never had a desire to be a big agency. We've never set out for size and growth to be one of the things that motivated us. For years, we turned down a lot of big press office type gigs because it wasn't what excited us. We wanted to do the big eye-catching, head-turning pieces and almost to stand out from our competitor set by trying to be famous for a particular kind of flavour of work. And now, probably that was to our financial cost, but in the long run, I don't think we'll regret it.
Great. And what does joining Publicis mean for Taylor Herring and for your clients?
For us, it means getting to scale up what we're currently doing. But it also means we get to work alongside a stable of some of the best creative agencies in the UK. We'll now get to work on global brands and global campaigns. We've also got a fair few international clients of our own, like Samsung, EasyJet and Disney, but we've never really had boots on the ground or capability in Europe. And I would say we've definitely had at least 3 or 4 calls a year saying, if you've got an office in New York, or LA, and of course we've had to say no and miss out on some opportunities and refer that off to another agency. So this changes that. So but very exciting for from our side.
Great. And you say there are no plans for you, your fellow colleagues, Kath and Peter, to move on. Can you elaborate on your future plans for the business?
Blimey, John. Well, we only announced this 6 days ago, so I would say, well, one step at a time. We've got a big job to do at Publicis Group, and that's certainly going to keep us very busy for the next few years. And look, I can't speak for Peter or Kath, but I'm a stayer. I was 10 years in my first job, 19 years in the current version of Taylor Herring. So I'm definitely in for the long term.
Great. Good stuff. And now over to you, Chris. When and why did Publicis decide it wanted a boutique creative comms shop?
It's probably worth taking a little step back, John, and just giving the context to how we arrived at the deal and in a sense why I'm at Publicis Group as well, because I spent the vast majority of my career at the independent end of the market, and I'm now thoroughly enjoying being part of a networked group. But when I first had my interview with Annette King, who James has already mentioned, Group CEO, back in, I'm going to say it was January of 2019, we talked about the importance that Annette was putting on the influence practice and the earned media capabilities of the group in as a growth driver for Publicis Group, as a growth opportunity. And that was what immediately attracted me into the group. And almost in that first meeting, Annette and I were talking about the fact that we may need to acquire to accelerate the growth of earned media within the Publicis Group in the UK. So if you look across the different marketing services works, it's, you know, our sort of direct competitors, you mentioned WPP earlier, we are a little underweight, or historically have been a little underweight in terms of the percentage of revenue that's derived from earned media. So that tells us it's a massive growth opportunity, not just from that perspective, but of course it's growing in the overall market. So we can grow our share and we can outperform the market, then we'll be doing really, really well. So then you start to map the market. We looked at sort of 2 or 3 different flavors of acquisition and had some conversations. And honestly, the conversation that we had with James and Kath and more broadly with Pete was the single most exciting, interesting conversation that we had. And we pretty quickly put all of our efforts into that conversation, you know, and then fast forward to last week, and of course it closed, and we're very, very, very fortunate to have Taylor Herring join us. We're very lucky and, you know, pleased that we've managed to team up. So I guess it started almost 2 years ago, and then we come down to now, and as James says, we're on day 6, so there's another possibly 10 years ahead of us, who knows.
Yeah. I mean, how will Taylor Herring fit into the Publicis machine in your mind?
Well, I would reject machine, John, obviously. But,
wonderful organic being.
Thank you. Yeah. First things first, Taylor Herring will stay clearly as the Taylor Herring brand, and we will continue to invest and grow and scale the Taylor Herring brand in partnership with James, Pete and Kath and the brilliant team down there. So it's fundamentally important that's number one on the list. And if you look across the group, you know, the likes of Digitas, Saatchi & Saatchi, Leo Burnett, Publicis Poke, all sorts of hugely kind of famous and storied agencies. So, you know, we're glad to have another one join the stable. Taylor Herring will sit within the influence practice, which I run alongside MSL and Salter Baxter, the sustainability consultancy I mentioned earlier. And we see opportunities for there to be integrated teams across those agencies. Maybe there is a sustainability strategy that needs more fame brought into it, for example, to make a real impact in the world. So it's just one example. And then, as James has said, there is a massive opportunity. Clients increasingly want earned media and earned first creativity in the stories that they tell and the campaigns that they create. And we now have another set of people to play into that opportunity. You know, at times MSL will be the right agency to play into that integrated opportunity. At times it will be Taylor Herring. And now we just have a bigger squad of players to choose from.
Great, thanks. So opening out to both of you, really, I mean, it seems like historically the main reason acquisitions in this industry fail is that two vastly different cultures are not well aligned. How are you planning to ensure Taylor Herring manages to retain its culture, you know, what makes it successful within a much larger holding group and a different structure, particularly with the move to the Publicis offices?
Well, from my side, and one of the things we did in our own due diligence was to spend a lot of time talking to the CEOs of the other group companies at Publicis. And what really impressed us is that they've all got that independent spirit about them. They've very much got their own brands. They're almost quite competitive within the group. They're fiercely proud about their unique ways of working, about their unique sort of special sauce and flavour. There's no sense of a sort of corporate whitewash that runs across the many different companies that Publicis have. And so we feel very confident that we're joining a family where they bought us for who we are, not to change us. We feel that's, and they've been very keen to stress that from day one, is that they don't want to change us, they just want to make it bigger and better.
Yeah, and I mean, John, that's in line with the overarching Publicis strategy, right? So Artur and Annette are both on record as talking about the importance of brand at an agency level, and, you know, brand in many ways is defined by the cultures that are in those agencies. You know, people do not join groups. The people that work with us join agencies, and they get attracted to the magnetic cultures that those agencies have. And the culture of Taylor Herring is a huge part of what makes that agency. So we have huge respect for that, and we know what we've bought in that sense, and we will do everything we can to foster that and to grow that, while of course augmenting it with the other opportunities and skills and investment and, you know, talent that we have across the group. So it's hugely important, but the group will be additive to the Taylor Herring culture.
Okay, thanks. Previously, Taylor Herring would compete with MSL on pitches. I'm wondering how the MSL team feels about having the hot new kid on the block, if you like, join the stable, particularly as MSL has been a sole Publicis creative comms agency in this market. Are there some sort of concerns about that?
There aren't concerns, John. So when I told, we told both sets of agencies at the same time, 9:30 last Wednesday, and it was just huge excitement all across the board, and people recognise Taylor Herring for what it is, which is a creative leader in our field, and they're excited to be able to learn from those people, to partner with them, and also for that Taylor Herring team to learn from some of the stuff that we do at MSL as well. So huge excitement, and both James and I were discussing this. Actually, neither of us can remember where a single time that Taylor Herring and MSL have been on the same pitch list. So I'm not sure that your opening statement that we would compete on pitches is entirely accurate. Both agencies have a really, I think, unique signature flavor and creative flair, and often it's different clients that are buying from, you know, different agencies.
Definitely. I think we're in slightly different genres of client as well. I think people that come to Taylor Herring tend to be sort of challenger brands, risk takers, wanting to do, you know, fun, entertaining, sort of standout work. And myself, I've obviously got some hugely big corporate mega brands on their list who simply wouldn't figure of putting Taylor Herring on there initially. But I think that potentially by coming together, we're able to offer in certain, when we won't always be pitching together, there'll be some things that are quite clearly not a Taylor Herring opportunity or not an MSL opportunity, but we will collaborate. In fact, in the last 12 months, as we've got to know each other, Subway is a good case in point. We picked up the consumer account for Subway late last summer, and they were looking for corporate expertise. We made an introduction to MSL, who are now handling all the corporate and purpose side of the business. And as a team, we are coming together on, terrible word, corpsumer activations, where the power of both agencies will come together and do some serious storytelling, but in a super engaging and impactful fashion.
Great. And briefly, because we are unfortunately running out of time, what will it look like in 5 years? How do you think Taylor Herring will fit once this kind of once this process has continued and you've embedded in, and what does the future look like?
From our side, I mean, our, you know, growth and scale are our sort of two key objectives that we're hoping to achieve without losing what makes us special and our culture of what we have now. I think we're going to be able to offer a lot more range for our clients. They're going to get incredible access to a much larger skill set than we currently have. We're going to have access to a strategy team of 12 who can help us with trends and behavioural insights and all the stuff that as a small indie that you'd never ever get your hands on. But also because the flavour of our work has changed beyond all recognition in the last 5 years. So the breadth of skills required has changed too. We've been doing so many more integrated campaigns like TV ads, some out of home, more and more content for paid platforms. It's fair to say there's been a little bit of winging it along the way as clients move us out of our comfort zone, but hopefully within Publicis not anymore, because if I need access to a brilliant director or a designer or a copywriter, they're just going to be down a corridor.
That is, unfortunately, all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Chris and James and our producer, Lindsay Riley from Rethink Audio. A really great, session. Really, really interesting. So thank you for that. If you enjoyed this podcast, please do visit prweek.com/UK to stay up to date with all our news and analysis. And we would love to hear your feedback on the PR Weekly. So we hope you'll join us next week. Until then, goodbye.